All right, I'm going to go ahead and call us back into order. Our scheduled meeting time is 3:15, so we've got about 30 minutes. There's three bills on the agenda. If I can find my agenda that I had here earlier, had a small trees worth of paper stuck in front of me in the last hour.
You see mine?
Sure, thank you. I guess I could look at my calendar, my phone. So, all right, so Congressman Norris has a couple resolutions on here regarding constitutional amendments. I'm going to go ahead and read the first one in and allow Congressman Norris to kind of give us an idea of first opportunity to present the bill and then kind of see how we can proceed. So, next item on the agenda is consideration of ONCR 1744, a resolution to amend Article 8, Section 7 of the Osage Nation Constitution to require justices of the Supreme Court and the chief judge of the trial court be appointed every 6 years by the principal chief and confirmed by the Osage Nation Congress. Congressman Norris, you have the floor, sir.
Thank you. I've been member of this Congress for 3 years now. Prior to my 3 years, I was in retirement. But 13 years ago, I was on a commissioner for the government reform, and I was one of the framers of our Constitution. We had, as framers of our Constitution, we had a very short time period in allotted to us to draft and write our Constitution, and it was felt as though we weren't given adequate time to really, really spend what is necessary to form our new government. With that said, I think that we did a very good job in coming up with a constitution that was ratified in 2006, and we've been operating under that this constitution for 11 years now. When we were drafting, or upon completion of our constitution, almost, if not every one of our reform commissioners told our Osage Nation people that this Constitution is not the final end-all in our government. It's a breathing, living document that can be used in the future, to evolve and change as the need arises. I've visited our Constitution a number of times, and I do it on a daily basis now, and read and wonder what actually we meant whenever we were drafting and writing this Constitution. I've had to go back and look at some of my old documents to refresh my memory. I've made telephone calls in the past and recently to other framers to discuss our Constitution with them. We believe, as framers, or some of the framers I know that I've contacted, believe that we, as framers, should get together and discuss areas in our Constitution we feel as though that may need to be, if not changed, modified, or some way get out to the Osage people to get their input into whether or not change is necessary in our Constitution. I recall whenever we were writing our Constitution, talking about the judicial branch. And of course, all of us, with the exception of one sitting as framers of the Constitution, had no idea what would be necessary to form or put together a judicial branch. Commissioner Rivard, Judge Rivard, was very helpful in providing the information and necessary, we thought at the time, to put together or form the judiciary section article of our Constitution. I'm not saying that the way that we retain our judges and justices, I'm not saying that it's not adequate. As a matter of fact, it's worked very well for the past 11 years. But I believe that the Osage people, when they voted on the Constitution, they voted on the Constitution as a whole. We've never gone in there and actually took the Constitution apart again and dissected it to find out or to see if there's any change necessary to improve upon what is written already. And even if change needs to be addressed. Again, I think that our retention has worked well. I have a lot of respect for our Chief Justice, our Justices, our Chief Trial Court Judge. I think they are top notch. And I do not believe that we could ask for any better people to serve in those capacities. But what I would like to be considered is allow the Osage people an opportunity to revisit this part of our Constitution when it talks about the judiciary and see if they are happy with the way that our justices and judges are retained, or if there's other ways of doing this. The states have adopted different methods. Other nations, Indian nations across the country, in their constitutions, they do it, if not by retention, different ways. I researched the Muscogee Creek Nation. In their constitution, they allow for the appointment of their judge and justices and with the confirmation and consent of their council. And they do this every 6 years. What I'm proposing or talking about right now is the Osage people, are they happy with the retention of our judge and justices, or do they want to do it a different way? The different way would be through appointment and then confirmation. Researching this online, I've come to the conclusion that there's three or four different ways that I've looked at in selecting these people for these positions. One is by retention, by appointment and confirmation, and then retention thereafter, which we're doing right now. Another way of doing it is by election and electing our judge and justices for 4 years or 6 years or whatever. Another way would be, I believe, would be through a merit process. What I'm really interested in doing is putting this out to the Osage people and find out if they are happy with retaining or the retention vote, or do they want to do it a different way. And the way that I'm proposing is to amend the Osage Nation Constitution, Article 8, to require the justices of the Supreme Court and Chief Judge of the Trial Court be appointed by the Principal Chief and then confirmed by the Osage Nation Congress. Thank you.
Okay. Congresswoman Bethel-Head.
Well, I've had a few conversations with Congressman Norris about this piece of legislation. And I've shared with him, and so I'll share now that as written, I really don't know that I could support it the way it is right now. I have been a proponent for a while, and I'm glad that you touched on a few things, and that I've often heard the framers of the Constitution say this: it was never a perfect document, and it was voted on in its totality, and we have visited several things that didn't work within that Constitution from the executive standpoint and the legislative standpoint, but not really the judicial. And so I can see that there are good arguments on both sides of retaining judges or electing judges. And some people will say, well, election of judges brings politics into the judicial. My opinion is that it's already has a little bit of political to it, because they're appointed by someone at the head of the executive branch, my opinion. And then they are retained on a ballot by the Osage people. So there's already some politics in there. I'm a proponent of putting on the ballot and giving the Osage people the option to tell us if they would rather elect their judges or retain them. And that's how I would have it worded in my perfect world. And if they tell us retain, and I would want this on the next ballot. If they tell us retain, then everything stays the same. But if the Osage people tell us they want to elect, then we move towards that process in the off year of when elections are held, so that judges would be elected by the Osage people when the six members of Congress are elected at that time. Now, I have not had these discussions until recently, but it's something that I've always thought about, and I don't only feel this way about judicial, I have felt that way about the Attorney General's office as well. And I've had that conversation with the current Attorney General. She knows that I've always thought, I think it's a good idea to put on the ballot and let the Osage people tell us whether they want the Attorney General to be nominated and confirmed by Congress, or if they want to vote on their Attorney General. And that's done in different areas. And yes, there are pros and cons to that as well. I've drafted a piece of legislation that would put that out to the people, but I've never filed it. I did speak with Holly about that, just to say, you know, it's not anything against you. This is just how I feel. I think the Osage people should be able to tell us. Since 2006, maybe they have had a change of heart of how we've set things up. Maybe they'd like to elect the Attorney General. Maybe they would like to elect their judges. And so for what that's worth, that's what I wanted to share.
Justice Drent, if you want to weigh in anytime, you're welcome to come join us at the table, or just raise your hand to be recognized. I see Congresswoman Edwards had her hand up. You're welcome to join us at the table.
I just wanted to say that this is something that people struggle with in state court scenarios. We have in Oklahoma, we have a retention ballot for our Supreme Court justices and our Court of Appeals judges. And around November 1st, usually, I get about a flood of phone calls that say, how do we vote on these judges? And they're asking me because they're the general population, and for the most part, they don't have any interaction with the judiciary. And so often you will see citizens go to the folks that interact with the judges to say, what do we do? Often I can't tell them. For example, I don't think I've ever appeared in front of the Court of Civil Appeals, I mean Criminal Appeals, so I can't tell you about the Criminal Court of Appeals. I can't tell you that this judge writes really succinct opinions, this judge is fair in hearings. I will tell you that in sitting on the committee that you've heard me talk about, the Standing Committee on the Federal Judiciary, representing the 10th Circuit, there are three areas that we vet judges for, and that is professional competence, judicial temperament, and integrity. And so for me, those are the three areas that I think about when people ask me about judges. If I don't know enough to tell them about that, then I say, I don't know. But it causes some heartache for a lot of people I know, because they feel like I'm being asked to vote on something I don't know anything about. And how do I even go find out about it? You know, commit a crime and have my case appealed to the Court of Criminal Appeals? I mean, so it is a struggle. That's one of the things about retention. Then you have the idea of elections. We had elections in 1994 for the Supreme Court Justice. We had one Supreme Court Justice, and then the other appeals court judges, and I believe the district judges, the trial court judges, were all appointed. And so that was a little different kind of way to consider what you were doing. In that case, for me in 94, I oversaw the budget and actually getting the courts set up, but it was the trial court judges that on a day-to-day basis worked with the court staff to get hearings set up for lower court cases. I never had any lower court cases assigned to me. I was part of the panel that heard appeals. And then another alternative is appointment and confirmation. You will see that in many tribal courts. They're appointed by the committee, usually the business committee or the council, if you will, and then can be confirmed one of two ways, or not confirmed at all. I mean, sometimes they're just appointed for a period of time. Now, if you do that, I will say that it's my opinion that you don't appoint for less than 4 years. Maybe 3 years is okay, but not anything less than 3 years, because usually you're asking people to make a commitment to go take a job. So it's very difficult for someone to say, I'm gonna go become a judge, and then I'm only gonna be there for 2 years. So this, I believe, proposal is for 6 years, and to me, that's a bit too long. I think 4 years is a reasonable amount of time, because if you get yourself locked into 6 years, then you may put yourself in a position if somebody doesn't work out of having to remove them. So those are things for consideration, but I will say that that is the downside to me of retention, is just that the population doesn't know what are they being asked to examine. And then it also puts those people that are in the, that appear in court, sometimes you'll get people that don't like the way their court case came out, and they'll undertake a campaign to remove or, you know, recall a very capable judge. But so there's a problem with every one of the alternatives, and I thank Congressman Norris for bringing the issue to the forefront to be discussed.
Okay. Justice, would you like the floor?
I would like the floor.
But you don't have to stand. You're welcome to do so.
Actually, I'll do that. All right, good afternoon, committee members. I appreciate the invitation to participate in these hearings. I've had a chance to consider this resolution that was introduced. The resolution, I do want to know, I wasn't consulted about it. I don't know if my associate justices were consulted about it, if the chief trial court judge was consulted about it. I wasn't told about it, so I just want to make that clear, and I want to make it very clear that when these types of things come forward, the best way to get a good discussion going is to involve the stakeholders, and that just is something that I don't see happening. So, with some exceptions. A few minor details. When you do a resolution, the resolution must contain findings and recitals. This resolution contains nothing. It is just a blanket suggestion to amend the Constitution. It doesn't say why it's being amended. It doesn't say the reasons why this even came up in the first place. It doesn't say whether or not Congress is making any findings that it was appropriate. So that's one of my concerns, is that your resolutions really need to have whereases. Whereas, Osage Nation Congress finds that whatever. So with those missing in the resolution, you are putting people at a disadvantage. So when we talk about the people being informed, this is one of the ways that they can be informed. A few questions that I have. What are the issues or problems was this resolution designed to solve? If there are complaints about the judges, then there's about four different mechanisms that you can go through to complain about them. If the concern is that people aren't informed, so they have to ask people, who do I vote for? At the end of the day, it is every voter's responsibility to be informed. That means they need to ask people. They might need to go online and do some research. They might need to make some decisions on their own. So I do want to say that the onus is always on the voters to be informed. So if they don't know something and that information is out there, then they need to find it out. If they want to know something and the information isn't out there, then we need to figure out how to get it out there. So, yeah, what led to the issues or problems that led to this resolution? How was this an improvement? Strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, threats. Has anybody tried to do a SWOT analysis of this to see whether or not it's worth pursuing? I also know a few other things that Congresswoman Edwards is right on, that there are different ways to do this. When you talked about, well, we need to put it to the OSH people, do they want to elect their judges or do they want to retain their judges? This resolution doesn't ask them either one of those things. It says, let's change the Constitution to appoint and confirm. So this resolution doesn't even ask them if they are going to elect or retain. It asks them, do you want to relinquish your power to decide who your judges are once they are already appointed and confirmed, or do you want to give that power up and give it to Congress every 6 years? Because that is what this does. This takes the vote away from the people. And this places it into Congress's hands. And so it does become very political. And when you invite politics into how judges are selected, there are so many pitfalls involved. You might notice that in the last few elections, when the judges were up for retention, you didn't see any signs up. Vote Drent for Chief Justice, retain Drent, retain Stepson, retain Pierce. You didn't see that because, honestly, as judges, we think it's a little tacky to campaign. We don't think it's necessary because if the people don't like the decisions that we make, they can kick us out, they can vote us out, we're done. And that is the will of the people. If they base it on a case that they had that they didn't like, and they start a campaign, don't retain this judge, oh my gosh, that is their prerogative. But to take that away from them and place it back in the hands of a body that is more politicized than the public would be about an issue, I think that is a detriment to the OSH people. So to say we need to give the Osage people the power to decide this, what you are in fact doing is taking the power away from the Osage people to decide this. This isn't a resolution that presents options. This is a resolution that presents one solution, and that solution is not election or retention. It's confirmation. And I do want to make a note that when I was first appointed, I had to be confirmed. And I got some questions, I had to make some statements, and ultimately Congress decided to confirm me. And then after that, it's up to the people to decide. And if they don't like it, they can vote us out of office. And I've seen people suggest that. Remember this at election time. Remember what this crazy Supreme Court justice said. Remember what this court did. That's their power. And I just caution you on deciding whether or not you want to take that away from the people. So I absolutely agree that with election, you have to gladhand. You know, elections are won by the people with the most money, who have loud voices, who can tell people that they're going to benefit by electing them. As a judge, how do you do that? How do you do that without saying, I'm going to do you a favor when I get in office? You can't do that as a judge. So to have judges campaign and kiss babies and raise money, it introduces an element that has no business in the justice system. It really doesn't. With retention, I already explained the benefits and the detractors. And the detractors, as far as people saying, I don't know how to vote for these judges, then what do they want to know? Do they want to know about how we rule on things? Do they want to know what we eat? Do they want to know what our positions are on certain political issues? That's the type of thing that elections start to get into. And as a judge, all we care about is that people trust us to make a decision. They're not going to like it. They may not support it. In some cases, they don't understand it. But they can at least say that I've got some confidence that this judge did what they thought was best. And so with the confirmation process, which is a lot what a lot of tribes do, I do want to note that the confirmation process at Muskogee and the confirmation process at a lot of the other tribes, power is concentrated in one body, and then that body decides who gets to be judges. That's not what this nation did. This nation divided its power into three bodies. And the executive gets to say, I think I want this person to be a judge. Congress decides whether or not that's a good decision. And then the people decide later if they even like that decision. So retention, honestly, is kind of the best of both worlds. Congress gets a say, the executive gets a say, and then the people finally get their say. So it's kind of the best of all of these different scenarios. I can't say in the future whether or not a sitting judge would campaign. We just felt like it's not appropriate because we want people to look at our opinions and our work and not our faces on billboards and donations and all sorts of things and barbecues. I mean, that is just not what judges should be doing. Judges should be focusing on the law and serving the community. They shouldn't be focusing on pleasing the populace. That's your guys' job. That is my position on 1744. I would really hope that at the end of the day, if there are questions about why should I vote for this judge, why should we retain this particular judge or justice, that we have the information out there that people would like to know. And that's really what I kind of want to focus on. If that's the issue people don't know, then let's figure out what they need to know and let's give it to them. If the issue is, well, we didn't have a lot of time, and now we want to put it to the people, do they want to elect or retain, this resolution doesn't do that. It takes both of those options away. So I just ask you to reconsider, what issue was this supposed to address? There are no reciting, what are you going to find in posing this to the Osage people? And to consider the benefits and the detractions from all of these different.
Thank you. Congresswoman Buffalohead.
Well, just as one member that spoke to the sponsor, I mean, it's not my intention, nor is it his, for this to go out of committee this session. I don't know about anyone else, but I, like I said earlier, in the way that it's written now, I couldn't vote for it. But if it was amended to include retention or to let the people decide if they want to retain or elect, that is something I would consider, yes. But I think that it needs work, it needs discussion, and I've already let Congressman Norris know, I don't see this going out the door right now in this session. We're near the end, and but I'm happy to hear from Chief Justice Grant on it. And, you know, like I said, there are pros and cons to both sides of electing and retention. There's good argument on both sides.
Okay, so Chief Justice Grant did travel to participate in some of this discussion. I feel compelled to go ahead and go past her scheduled time by a little bit and at least allow her an opportunity to address the committee regarding ONCR 1745 if she's prepared to do so. I was going to request a postponement of ONCR 1744, if that's okay with the sponsor.
That's fine with me.
Okay. Motion to postpone by ONCR, or by Congresswoman Buffalo Head, ONCR 1744, seconded by Congressman Hamilton. Discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say yes.
Yes.
I only heard one yes. Okay. Any opposed, say no? Okay.
Yes.
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 Yes. Yes. Okay. ONCR 1744 is postponed. Next is consideration of ONCR 1745, a resolution to amend Article 8, Section 11 of the Osage Nation Constitution to put the Chief Judge of the Trial Court in control of the budget and administration of the trial court. Congressman Norris is the sponsor. Congressman Norris, would you tell us about your resolution, please, sir?
Okay, again, going back, looking at the Constitution, reviewing it, I find that, find my Constitution. Oh, here it is. Talks about, again, Article 8 in the judiciary, and it talks about the Chief Justice, and then it talks about the Chief Trial Court Judge. And it gives a lot of, or to me, reading this Constitution and having participated in it, they operate in different court systems, but they operate equally, I would think. Their roles, one is not more important than the other. The Constitution speaks in several sections in regard to the Chief Trial Court Judge. And I was looking down at Section 11 where it talks about the administration of the courts, all the courts. The administration is through and by the Chief Justice of the Osage Nation Supreme Court. In my opinion, the Constitution gives the Chief Trial Court Judge, he operates in a different type of court than the Supreme Court. He has people that he supervises on a daily basis. He has an office to run, a court to run, and who better would know how to administer and budget for his or her court than the Chief Trial Court Judge? The Chief or Justice, then the responsibility for administering over the Supreme Court lies with the Chief Justice. I just could never understand why the Chief Trial Court Judge and why we wrote it as such in this Constitution. why can't the chief trial court judge administer their own court, formulate their own budget, administer their own court, supervise their own employees, give their own employees their own performance evaluations, because they're the ones that report to that them as a supervisor. And that's what I'm trying to get corrected. I say corrected, that's what I'm trying to address in my resolution, is giving the administration powers over to the chief trial court judge. And I feel as though that I'm not taking away any power from the Supreme Court justice. To me, it would be less of a, I don't want to call it a headache, but less work to do in formulating budgets and administering courts. And we just, it should just be separate, I don't know if you call them departments or just separate courts. I don't know how best to explain it any further than that. I just think that the Constitution specifically talks about the Chief Justice, specifically talks about the Chief Trial Court Judge. They were both confirmed by the Congress and then put on again retention during voting time, and they are, one is no more important than the other, and they both operate in separate courts. They both ought to have the ability to administer their own courts. And that's all I've got, RJ. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Any other members of the committee want to weigh in prior to Chief Justice Trent getting an opportunity to address this? Congresswoman Bufflohead?
I was wondering if the sponsor had spoken with the chief judge of the trial court to see if that was something that was, I don't want to say,
in the,
I'm going to choose my words wisely, but to see if that's something that they would want to take on.
In the beginning, the first person that I had, not conversation with, but text messages with, was the Chief Justice. And we had a little dialogue going on there for about a day or two. And she understood my thoughts. And I think in the beginning she thought that I was going to try to pass legislation. And she corrected me on that real quick, or we got that straight, that this is not an act that I'm going to propose, but a resolution to amend the Constitution. But I got some feelings in the text messages from the Chief Justice. Informally, I talked with the Chief Trial Court Judge, and they have no problem with administering their own court. In fact, I believe that they'd feel more comfortable in administering their own court. But to have a formal sit-down official meeting with them, no. It's been informal, mostly.
Okay, thank you. Anyone else? Committee? Okay, Chief Justice. Floor is yours.
Okay, committee members. Some of my initial comments would say there's no findings, there's no recitals, there's nothing indicating why this resolution is being proposed in the first place to the people, or why this amendment. The second thing is that, no, I wasn't aware that that he meant a constitutional amendment until he corrected me and said, well, that's what I meant. And then that was the end of the discussion. And after I learned that he had gone to speak to Chief Judge Stepson and the information that was provided to him by the Chief Judge, I contacted him again and said, I'd love to talk with you about some of these problems that apparently you think we have. And I did not hear a response. So I understand that this is a, it appears that this is a response to some perceived issues that may exist or may not. Could just be in my head. So I want to clarify a few things. The chief trial court judge is mentioned in terms of appointment, qualifications, and to appoint associate judges along with the chief justice. That is it in terms of the chief trial court judge's responsibilities. The way I've been operating is the chief trial court judge is responsible for managing the docket of the trial court. And as many of you know, the chief trial court judge, the current one, well, he's been our only one, but our current one, presides over one docket a week. So one day a week is what he chooses. And then when cases come along that don't fall within that category, it's criminal and traffic, he assigns it to one of the other associate judges. So in some previous statistics I sent you, I've indicated, you know, here's these types of cases, these types of cases, and these types of cases. So in terms of docket management, I have deferred to the chief trial court judge. At one point, I had a conversation with the attorney general who said, what happens when we file these cases? And then the next thing I know, a different judge is handling it. And I said, well, that's the chief trial court judge's prerogative. He can assign cases how he sees fit. But I also want to note that nobody reports to him. The court clerks report to the court administrator. The court administrator is responsible for all the day-to-day administration of the court. So accounting, IT issues, human resources issues, that all goes to the court administrator. So it seems like this is really more about a dislike or disagreement with the structure of the court, or of the judicial branch, I should say. And I want to make it clear, this is a judicial branch. This isn't court A, court B. This is one branch of government. There should be one head of this one branch. And I pose the question, if you didn't have a speaker of Congress, who would be in charge of the legislative branch? If you didn't have a principal chief, who would be in charge of the executive branch? What this particular resolution does is it divides the judicial branch into two different entities. And it creates duplicate tasks. It creates a duplication of administrative costs. It would be almost like if each individual branch, instead of paying indirect costs for IT and HR, would go instead to each individual branch. So it'd be like if you guys had your own IT department and your own HR department and your own accounting department. That's what this does. This creates a separate reporting system. As far as performance reviews go, I will be completely frank. The person who has received these performance reviews hasn't been happy with her reviews. So naturally, she wants to report to somebody else. And so I feel like that this resolution is circumstantial, it's circumstance specific. This is because of who's currently sitting in the chair, who's currently employed. This doesn't seem to be a general response. Pretend that I'm not sitting in the seat. Pretend that somebody else is sitting in that seat. If there's somebody who's going to work one day a week and, you know, frankly, the communication lines aren't as open as they could be. So, what I'm trying to get across is, I think the underlying reason for this particular amendment is based less on an administrative savings, less on a realization that these are two separate courts, which they are, by the way, and I've never been assigned a lower court case, so, you know, we've never operated that way, so I'm gonna make that clear as well. As far as the trial court goes, the chief judge is responsible for maintaining the docket of the trial court, which He does, to the best of my knowledge. But, excuse me, but in terms of personnel issues, in terms of budgeting, it seems like it would just duplicate a lot of work. It would duplicate costs. And at the end of the day, it would make the judicial branch headless, and it would cause confusion. Who signs this contract? Who negotiates this contract? What if the Chief Justice negotiates a contract that says term A, and the Chief Judge negotiates a contract that says opposite of term A? So then you have this internal conflict between these two courts. Having a separate administration system for lower courts versus Supreme Courts makes sense if you've got a dozen trial courts underneath you. You have one. It makes sense if you have trial court, appellate court, Supreme Court. Again, we only have the two courts. We have Supreme and we have trial. It makes sense if you divide courts into municipal courts and superior courts. Again, this is just what we have. So in terms of administrative efficiency, in terms of understanding who the head of the judicial branch is supposed to be, and in terms of identifying what the responsibilities of the Chief Trial Court Judge are, I think the Constitution has been clear, and I think that dividing them creates some uncertainties and some instability. And my main concern is that it would leave the judicial branch without a head, and if that's what the people feel is appropriate, then certainly we can go in that direction. But I do want to stress, we're not going to live forever. And at the end of the day, if somebody thinks that it's time for a new guard to come in, then talk to us. Talk to the judges. Talk to the justices. Say, you know, you had a good run, but why don't you think about not re-upping next year or in 2 years or something, and let somebody else come in and try this on for size. So there are other ways to accomplish what the issues, I think, really are, as far as this resolution goes, rather than doing these piecemeal amendments to the Constitution. So that is kind of my take on this, is that this is really a dismantling of the judicial branch into two separate things. And it really does take a leap from that notion of unity and that notion of having two separate branches. Thank you.
Thank you. Congressman Norris and Congresswoman Edwards.
What, it's hard to argue with a lawyer, and I don't intend to argue or anything of that sort. That's not what I'm here for. I think that we need some more people here at the table talking about this. You know, we've got our committee here. We've heard from the Chief Justice. It may or may not put out an invitation to the Chief Trial Court Judge and see what the take is from the Chief Trial Court. They may have a different feeling altogether. I don't know, right now, we don't have any information coming from that court, and there are other parties, I believe, that could be present and offer some more information in that regard. That's all. Now, thank you, sir.
Thank you, Congresswoman Edwards.
Well, I want to say that I feel like Congress has addressed issues that we have with the court in a piecemeal fashion, rather than getting together and deciding and giving direction to the court on what we anticipate out of our court in the next 10 years. For example, we talked about what we're gonna do ballot. But we don't go and look back and say, what does it require to undertake Tuloa jurisdiction, Tuloa tribal law and order?
What does it require to undertake that jurisdiction? Well, it requires a few things that we heretofore haven't budgeted money for, and the court may not have room, physical space for. And so we have to be careful not to just impose an idea on the court without thinking it through. At the same time, I think that we started out in our heads with the concept that we would have a part-time court, if you will, which is what we had in the past, where we had an administrator, the chief judge, the Supreme Court judge was the administrator, and then we had some lower court, trial court judges that came in on a as-needed basis when cases needed to be heard. We had one court employee and a part-time court employee. That's what we had back in the day, so to speak. Now we've grown. You've seen that our court is now a $500,000 a year undertaking, which is fine, but I don't think that we've talked about where are we headed with this. I know that I thought, and probably haven't paid much attention, that when we had a chief trial court judge, that was the person that came to work every day and took the majority of the docket, and that these other judges that we had, which in a lot of circumstances are called associate judges or pro tem judges or conflict judges, many times an associate judge would be there every day, but those pro tem and conflict judges are, they just come in on a case-by-case basis when needed. So when we established pay scales, I really thought we had one full-time trial court judge that was hearing the majority of the dockets, and then we had some other judges that filled in when there was conflict. I don't think that's what we're doing. Based on what I hear today, that's really not what we're doing. So, I mean, we need to have a better understanding of that. I know we've heard we don't have enough money to compensate. We have judges that are still waiting to be compensated from years past. Well, we try to do a pretty good job of checking funding, but I think we may have a situation. I don't know what's causing that, but perhaps it's because we thought something different was going on with respect to the structure of our court than is. I think that that would be a place that we need to stop and look in thinking about, are we going to have a trial court that's the main day-to-day operations of the court, and we're going to have a Supreme Court that sits and hears appeals? Are we going to have, as we have now, a Supreme Court judge that's the overall administrator of the court? Who's going to prepare the budget? Right now, the Constitution says that the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court prepares and administers the budget. We've done that. We've been doing that. Is there some problem with that? I don't know. But I do know that we put ourselves and Chief Justice Drin in a difficult position when we asked her, or I feel like it's a difficult position, when we asked her to come and talk to us about a budget and tell us about the budget, and then I feel it's hard for us when we are thinking, you know, we don't really have, we're in a budget crunch. And it's not that we want to say no, but we've got to find a way to make this all work. I know that people have expressed to me, we feel like we are making it a personal issue rather than a professional issue when we have to have that interaction. And I don't like that because I think that it's not that at all. So I think that this was a way to get us to start having this kind of dialogue. I think we all need to educate ourselves more fully about different kinds of models and decide, are we going to be, because I really always assumed that we weren't going to take that step to be a full-blown, every day we're going to have hearings kind of court. I thought we would hear, you know, I've told you guys this before, there are some tribal courts that have court once a month. Those are part-time judges. They come in on court day. Really, the court administrator or the court clerk runs the court on the day-to-day business. There are courts that have court twice a month. There are courts that have court every day with a full complement of court staff. And I think Chief Justice Trent might sit in a court that's a pretty robust court. So we need to learn more about this. And that's it.
Let's see. I really do want us to find out about this situation, though, with lack of funding going to our judges, because it's just like not paying our bills on time in the congressional affairs situation. I would find it very troubling if we aren't paying our contract judges on time. So that's an aside to this, but we should explore it.
All right. Congresswoman Whitemore.
I don't know if this is germane to the resolution, but it was just the last comment that Congresswoman Edwards said, and I'm not aware of the situation about not being able to pay our judges, and was it addressed in this year's budget, I guess would be my question to...
Oh, no, the issue isn't that there's a lack of funds. The issue is that the cap on research and writing is $10,000,
okay.
And this particular judge has exceeded that cap because she presided over a 3-day complex civil trial, and that ended up equating a lot more research and writing hours. There were, I forget how many boxes of discovery that she had to go through, six or seven, I believe, and it was a multi-day trial, so that really just pushed everything over.
I understand that.
Yeah, so it's not a lack of funding.
Course.
The other thing I think is currently, I don't know what the process that the court goes through for the appointment of the other judges, but you always hear me talk about opportunities for young Osages to get some practical experience. And I know we have Osage preference in contracting and Osage preference in employment. I don't know how that equates with appointments for judges, and I feel like we ought to try to provide some opportunity for the younger attorneys to have opportunity to serve in the judicial branch if they can, if they want to.
Chief Justice.
My response to that is a judicial mentoring program where we actually select attorneys who are interested in being judges and send them to the National Judicial College for judicial training and invest in them to become judges. Being an attorney is great, but it's not for everybody. Being a judge is incredible work. It's a different skill set than you have as an attorney. As an attorney, you've got to argue on behalf of your client. Your duty is to your client. As a judge, your duty is to the law. And that's something it's a very different responsibility. And it's amazing work. And the reason why we can't get good people, I shouldn't say that. The reason why we can't get a lot of Osage people interested in being judges, because we have great associate judges right now, we'll say that, is because we don't pay them anything. This is not a living wage what we pay them right now. So a judge is going to have to do what one of our associate judges does, is she's a traveling judge. She goes from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. She sits on multiple dockets, and that's how she makes her living. A young, enterprising Osage attorney who decides they want to become a judge, we're asking them to risk that, the instability of being a traveling judge, of not having the exposure to other tribes, of being able to go from tribe to tribe and become a judge. So this is actually something that was the subject of a conference I spoke at, which was how do we recruit more Native judges into, or more Native attorneys into becoming judges. And at the end of the day, it was pay. Think of all the Osage attorneys we have. Do you know why they're not judges? Because attorneys make more money. And at the end of the day, that's really one of the factors. And you have to love this work. So that's my response to that. But the idea of doing like a judicial mentoring program would, I think, really prop up a lot of young enterprising attorneys who would like to become a judge.
Congresswoman Whitemore.
And then I just want to make one more comment about constitutional amendment resolutions and how I feel about them. When we see issues that we think that are in our our founding document, our Constitution. I think what we do as a what the legislative body is we put that before the people. The Constitution says this, but what we present to you right now will change that, and it could say this. It's a choice that you put before the people, and the people will decide whether to vote on that constitutional amendment or not. Purpose and findings, I personally don't feel like it's an appropriate thing to put in a resolution to put before the people. I think we have some whereas language which authorizes this body to be able to vote on a constitutional amendment resolution to place before the people. I think that we have committee meetings like this to discuss why we think it needs to be set before the people. And then we go out and we educate the people during the season when they gather to consider ballot questions and explain this is being placed before you. The Constitution says this. This is what's being presented to change to. And to me, it's that cut and dry for the job that we do. So many constitutional questions of amending the Constitution have failed. I think we've had 4 to 5 pass recently. So when we were making this change in government, the resounding words that I heard is, it's a living document to be changed to fit our needs as a people. And so when this body votes on an amendment to place on a ballot before the people, that's what we're doing. We're letting the people decide. Full disclosure, this is what it says, this is what it'll do. And then the people decide whether they want to make that change or not. I feel like that's what our role is as Congress members, to do that. I feel like that there's snags in it, and there are many snags in this document, that we need to fix them, or either we need to put in a constitutional amendment to have a constitutional convention. To do a complete review, as Congressman Norris stated before, that he thought the Reform Commission could get together on it. But and I think that could be beneficial too, but quite possibly I need to pull that resolution out and put it on the ballot also to see if this document is, people think it's best suited for us. You know, I don't know, but I don't think there can be an either or ballot question. Either you want to elect or you want to, as a constitutional question, we can place both before. You know, it's not an either or choice though, in my view, for a constitutional amendment. So this is what it is, and it's a vote at yes or down. I mean, that's how it happens.
Okay, Chief Justice Grant.
And I apologize for jumping in on this. I've had people come to me and ask about these constitutional amendments. They don't know what the result is. When there was an amendment to amend the language regarding the maximum punishment for certain types of crimes to just conform with federal law, people were like, well, why are we doing that? What does that mean? And I said, well, it's because the Tribal Law and Order Act increased, you know, how much time you can give someone, and we don't want to come back and keep amending the Constitution so that we can, you know, so that we can conform to federal law. And they're like, oh, that's what that is. Okay, well, I like that idea. So what I see happening in these constitutional amendments or even initiatives is that there is usually an explanation that is supposed to be neutral, saying this is what it does. This is the effect that it has. Or somebody for it and somebody against it. I've seen those as well. But these are being proposed in a vacuum. And as a voter, I want to know more than just the words. I was like, what is the consequence of this? What does it mean? What will it do? And but that one where, you know, we wanted to get the maximum sentence for certain types of crime increase or to conform to federal law, which at the time had increased the maximum time, that had to be explained to people because they thought something shady was happening. So having that information would, I think, go far in getting some of these amendments to the people to really consider and decide whether or not they want to adopt them.
Thank you for that. I wish we would have gotten the full 2 hours and 15 minutes that we had scheduled for this meeting, but that didn't happen. I appreciate Congressman Supernoff for allowing us to cut into his time. But Chief Justice Drent, thank you for coming down and participating.
Thank you for having me.
Next time, if you're not able to come down, you're always welcome to participate by phone.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. At this time, I was really looking forward to ONCA 1711. That
would have been
fun. Motion to adjourn. Seconded by Congressman Hamilton. All those in favor say yes.
Yes.
Any opposed say no. We're adjourned. Thank you.